This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a terrific leader who wears two different hats at a great medical center. We're joined today by Bashar Nasser. Bashar is the CFO and the COO of the Gerald Champion Regional Medical Center, New Mexico. Thrilled to have him with us today. Bashar, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us about the Gerald Champion Regional Medical Center?
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Bashar Nasser. I'm the CFO and COO for Gerald Champion Regional Medical Center. We are one of three hospitals in the state of New Mexico that we are a 501c3 and a standalone. We own ourselves. We don't have a foundation or a county or any health system that or a university that own us. We have been in business for close to 73 years. The hospital maintains a primary and secondary market of about 68,000 in population. We are located south central of the state of New Mexico, about an hour and a half north of El Paso, Texas. We are a full 98 licensed bed hospitals. We are over $200 million in net revenue hospital. We are a hospital that is focused a lot on its vision, mission, and making sure that the community receives everything they need, and care is close to home. Nobody have to travel in the state of New Mexico for hours to receive specialty care. We have multiple joint ventures and affiliations, and this is how we can maintain our independence. Strong balance sheet. We are currently rated by S&P Global as an A-rated hospital with great outcome or positive outcome, stable outcome, I'm sorry, let me make it clear. Also, we maintain around 300 days with cash on hand and have a high debt service coverage ratio, which is well above 9. We employ over 85 physicians and mid-levels in our community. We have joint ventures for a freestanding surgery center on campus. We also have a freestanding imaging center. We have joint venture with the Hospitals of Providence, which are part of Tenet out of El Paso for our interventional cath lab. We are a teaching facility where we are working on our family medicine residency program with the new medical college that opened in Las Cruces, New Mexico, Borough College. And we have relationship with Memorial Hospital to have 1+2 PGY. We also receive 6 general surgeons every year from the University of New Mexico that they come and spend each one of them 2 months for their PGY3 training. So this is a high level of what Gerald Champion is and what we do here.
So simply really remarkable. And talk about, when you look at this year, Bashar, what are you most excited about, most focused on this year? You know, what are you most excited about and focused on?
So if we look at what we call it FY22, which started July 1 of last year in 2021, and as we are approaching the end of our fiscal year, it has been a marvelous year for us. You know, we did get a little bit of phase three federal stimulus, not as high as we all got 2 years ago, but we saw the volume coming back, especially post the pandemic in our region. We saw the influx of COVID patients that they came during October of 2021 through March of 2022. But even since then, we continue to see on the inpatient side, high acuity level with patients who constantly were just coming in with a lot of deferred care. People, as you remember, during the pandemic, were afraid to come to the ER. They don't want to have surgery. They don't want to have diagnostic. We've had shutdowns for surgeries, unless if it was an emergency. So there's a lot of care deferral, and we saw a lot of this coming back. But having to factor through all this, make sure that you have the proper space. We had to double up on patients in the ICU, especially COVID patients. We've had to close surgery for months and use the recovery area to house patients. We ran census close to 90% of the hospital total licensed beds. And that puts pressure on hospitals because typically you don't have enough nurses and staff to sustain that for too long. not counting, we've had so many days with patients in the ER, in the corridors, waiting for a bed to be admitted. So we had to navigate through all this. So volume was big, but also we saw a big spike in the nursing costs, the agency costs. But we have been proactively working on bringing in a lot of international nurses, and that kind of like reduced the impact of what we saw. We're also very successful in making sure that we had all the proper PPEs, all the needed medication, starting outpatient IV therapy for COVID patients to kind of like keep them out of the hospital and from being hospitalized. We're active in our community with a lot of COVID vaccinations, and that helped a lot. Although our county is not like one of the highest, we are in a red county, and there was some resistance for a lot of people in receiving COVID vaccination. Many other initiatives were done on the hospital, and every employee in this hospital did an excellent job of showing up to work every day, making sure that we took care of our community and delivered the best care.
I mean, it's an amazing tribute to your people that, you know, regardless, through thick or thin, through their own risk themselves, they show up and take care of your community. I mean, it's a lot to be proud of. Talk about you serving dual roles of CFO and COO. You know, more and more, we see great leaders double-hatting. Talk about pros, cons, why double-hatting, two big roles. Talk about that for a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure. First of all, I want to mention, before I joined Gerald Champion over 8 years ago, I served in a group CFO role with Health Management Associates before they were acquired by CHS. And at that time, I ran two divisions, which is about 26 hospitals, $2 billion in net revenue back then, $400 million in EBITDA. And prior to that, I worked with IASIS Healthcare out of Nashville, and I ran 10 hospitals in Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. And we had big hospitals, and there was about $1 billion in net revenue. So my past experience, not just being a CFO, CFOs are usually should be very engaged in operations strategically, overseeing a lot of different service areas and not just the financial departments. They work so closely with the CEO. When the CEO is out, CFOs should be in charge of the facility. And that has been the case here for 8 years. I have been number two in the facility working with our CEO. And we just work closely, very well, and making sure that whether it's physician recruitment, physician engagement, service line development, focusing on organic growth, strategic growth, a lot of different affiliations and planning, and all related operations, besides, you know, making sure that we as a facility, when we are high and profitable, you know, we have, over the past 8 years, we have spent a lot of money on major capital developments, master facility plan expansion, building a new medical office building, increasing the size of our ER, full renovations, make sure all the equipment are state-of-the-art. We just did our cancer center and working on many other initiatives. So when you are so involved with all that strategic planning, not counting also over the past years, beside all that construction that we did, we paid for all this in cash. So we're a hospital that has very low debt. Our debt to capitalization ratio is below 19%. The hospital is working on being debt-free in 2.5 years from now, and that will be great. So we're not going to have any bond obligation or any type of line of credit debt, and continue to be strong. Plus, with those years, the hospital was able to set up hundreds of millions of dollars of a large investment portfolio with large companies with a balanced investment policy where it's split evenly between equity and fixed income. And last year, for instance, you know, if we remember, the performance of the stock market ending June 30th of 2021 was one of our best years. So beside the fact that we can deliver double-digit net operating income from operation, we can also generate a significant amount of investment income. Combined, it makes the hospital with its EBITDA, or it's what we call revenue in excess of expenses, substantial. and which sometimes it comes out as to be as close as 25-30% as a percentage of net revenue.
No, and more that's the case with health systems. Take a moment. You've had this great career in leadership, HMA, IASIS, you know, originally a Mountaineer. Talk to us for a moment, Bashir, about, you know, what advice, if you had to give an emerging leader a couple pieces of advice, what advice would you give to an emerging leader about leadership?
I want to touch a little bit about some aspect of one of the things when I got here 8 years ago. There was a financial weakness here, and usually, even if you have really great leaders, CEO, CNO, and others, and so CFOs are the main drivers for the overall performance of a hospital, a lot of leaders focus very heavily on expenses, labor management, contract negotiation, inflation factor, supplies, drug costs, and all that, but they don't spend enough time talking about the revenue cycle. You know, at Becker and many other conferences that I've been speaking at over the past couple of years, the big focus should be always on two components. One, a strategy that works where you can have a good control of your market share by employing a good amount of physicians owning multiple establishments throughout the community. Once you own your market, you're in a good position to negotiate favorable rates with the managed care payers. You know, in healthcare, you can always grow the top line by two factors, price. And price, what we mean by price is getting paid more for what you do every day for the same book of business. And that's a component that you should be always in contact and negotiation with your managed care payers. Because as your inflationary cost to operate is going up, you have to provide merit increases to protect the staff. You have travelers, all that put a lot of pressure on salaries and wages. Providing better health benefits for your staff, that's also inflationary costs. And all other aspects where all your vendors constantly come in trying to negotiate higher rates because they're trying to pay their people too more. So as you negotiate through all that, what is your focus on net revenue and the top line? That's one. Two, once you guarantee the price, and you can get an increase every year that can offset some of your inflationary costs, you need to have a true, well-defined strategic plan to continue to have strategic growth. Understand your market share. Understand your out-migration by service line on inpatient and outpatient. Continue to recruit and maintain the proper specialties, and not counting that you have to support it with a good complement of primary care. You know, it takes 11 primary care providers just to keep one orthopedic surgeon busy. So once you have the right mix and you can truly provide home or care close to home, by doing that, you reduce the out-migration and you'll be surprised of how much of that new incremental book of business that comes to you will trickle down to your margin. Because as we all know, we have fixed costs to operate the hospitals and you have variable costs. So by bringing in new business, your fixed costs should not be impacted, and you have some adjusted variable costs that will be impacted, but accordingly, your margins will improve. And that's how we do it, by making sure we have a strategic plan that works. And it's not just something that you put it in a business plan. We go over it every week. We make sure that things are happening. Also, making sure that you take care of your good people, because if you have good attrition and you keep a lot of the high performing staff and leaders, your organization will succeed.
Just Bashir, a magnificent perspective, quite frankly, on both revenues, on people, on strategic plan, and all the things you got to look at in a highly changing environment. Bashir, I want to thank you for joining us today again on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just magnificent, a magnificent career. And magnificent clarity of thought always, which is a pleasure for me to listen to and to hear. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.